Welcome to the CBA's ABCs of Bow Hunting.
I'm here with Wes Mendez and Kevin Lewis at Quickdraw Archery, which is Kevin Lewis's archery shop down here in, are we in Colorado Springs?
Littleton.
Colorado. I'm new here. I'm learning the location, but I'm walked in, was immediately impressed with your shop, and man, it's pretty awesome. How long you guys been here?
Well, the shop itself has been here for 7 years now.
Yeah.
We've owned it going on 3 years.
Nice, man. How's that been?
It's been good. I mean, obviously, year three was a little weird, being 2020, but it's been good. We've been enjoying it.
Do you find that more people got into archery over the past year? Because it's like a semi-safe outdoor activity thing that people could do, or any trend?
Yeah, we're seeing definitely an increase, especially over the last 6 months. Obviously, you know, the world was kind of shut down for a while, but definitely an increase in demand. But at the same time, of course, more struggles on the supply chain side. So
yeah,
more people coming in, but it's much harder to get stuff, much slower to get stuff.
Yeah, it's really interesting. So I work in construction, and like the reverberating impacts are these peculiar little things. Hey, these people who make resin that goes into all these other building products, that's shorted. Or obviously we're all seeing like plywood go up in price and wood prices go up. But like, most of us never consider the supply chain associated with these amazing machines that we love to use. You know, I take it to the shop, they fix it, they get me my replacement parts, but that's why I ordered my bow back in October. I was like, I got to get shooting. I got to get dialed in.
Well, yeah, you're lucky now. And hopefully a lot of people did that, because at this point, you know, we're probably 3 weeks from being too late for hunting season on some of those flagship bows at this point.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was worried about that. I was telling you guys before we started the podcast, I just got a Baku bike, and when I called them, I sold my motorcycle and just bought the Baku with the money, but I called them and I was like, hey, I don't want to get like skunked. I don't want to receive this thing like mid-August or mid-September. Like, I need to scout with it. I need to get used to it. So I'm happy I have it, but still a bit of a learning curve there. I fell off twice when I was downhill, and I was like, oh, you could hurt yourself like real bad, real quick on these things. But you can also get very far and save your legs. So I'm excited about it. Before we dive into what we're going to talk to Kevin about, Wes, I was curious if you had anything in the legislature going on, updates.
Yeah, I mean, it's 12 days, June 12th, last day of the legislature. So we're kind of at the tail end of it.
Oh, interesting.
But, you know, just an update on a couple of the bills we talked about. House Bill 1243, which was originally 1040, which was kind of the wolf funding piece coming from the general fund. It's now 1243. They added an amendment on it, new bill, changing and stratifying the funding sources. So general fund, donations, a little bit from the cash wildlife fund, but no funding sources coming from licenses. So that's a big win.
That's huge. And that's going to pass, might pass.
It passed.
Wonderful.
So it's pending.
Governor Signer.
Signature, which he's expected to do. The other thing with it is we got $1.1 million in funding for year one.
Whoa.
So originally the request was for the first 3 years of reintroduction, $5 million in funding. The Joint Budget Committee kind of looked it over. They just funded year one. So next year, everybody, all the sportsmen's groups are going to have to go back, lobby the senators, and try to get the second and third year of funding. But overall, big win there. The other one that kind of came up is Senate Bill 249. This is the Keep Colorado Wild annual pass. So essentially the concept of the bill is when you renew your vehicle registration, they're going to have an option that you can purchase your pass there. So you have to opt in. There seems to be a lot of support, because it's one of their initiatives to really drive funding sources for CPW. There's been a little heartburn as it was being discussed in committee of making sure it's not opt-in. Once you've opted out of it, it doesn't default next year.
Right.
A lot of challenge from some certain senators to CPW to really go out and communicate to the constituents proactively, so that they know about this option, especially before kind of they purchase their new Colorado Park Pass. So that one looks like it's going to pass too. I don't know. We're getting pretty tight into the legislative calendar close off. So we'll see. Keep that one on focus. But those are the two big hunting ones.
Yeah. I'm curious about the Keep Colorado Wild. Is this a brand new thing? Is this something that has existed but hasn't been selling? Is it a part of the state park pass?
It's basically the state park pass you have on your vehicle.
Uh-huh.
What they're going to try to do is just make it reduce the friction of having to go to CPW. When you renew your vehicle at DMV, you have the option to buy it then.
Very cool.
And then you could add multiple on different vehicles. Like there's a whole process of doing it that would be more efficient.
Yeah.
And at the same point, allow more opportunity for CPW to kind of sell the park passes.
I mean, it makes sense. It's like so cheap. It's 70, 80 bucks or something like that. I mean, you go to a park like three times, it's going to pay for itself. Yeah. So I don't see why people wouldn't, but that's nice. Like you see all these people like skiing on their license plate or Rocky Mountain National Park. Correct. And it's like, you do that when you buy a new car, you get a new car maybe once every 5-10 years. So it's nice to have something annual that's like, all right, we can increase the numbers here.
Yeah. So that's a good one. The rest, pretty much everything now is firearms based legislation. So that really percolated up after Boulder. And then, you know, as we've continued to have issues with mass shootings, that's kind of added more fuel to the fire. So two bills that passed were the safe storage as well as the reporting of lost and stolen firearms.
Mm-hmm.
So again, they kind of just slid right through. Governor signed both of them. Generally, they're pretty, you know, it depends who you talk to. Like there is some, I'm not an expert in the firearms side
right,
of the thing.
Right.
We don't, most of the sportsmen's groups aren't on that as heavily as, you know, the organizations that specifically kind of follow that. Cause it, I think your parents, you come from a family full of lawyers and once you touch firearms, I mean, that's heavily constitutional law and it's just a whole mess of complexity. So those two pass. The two bills that are in debate now, and the debate is very, very heated. The first one is the establishment of the Office of Gun Violence. So this is a group that's like a PSA group that's basically going to take all this information, have one repository that people have to come in and out of that provide messaging. It's there's still a lot of vagary around like what it does.
Yeah.
It doesn't really, to my knowledge, do any type of policy base, but it seems to kind of sit more like you would say an organization, whether it be DMV or something else in Colorado, like that, everything would channel out of it. So
interesting.
Outreach, mental health, help, all these other type of kind of avenues would kind of circulate through that.
Yeah.
I've read it a couple times, listened to the floor debate. I'm still getting educated on what it really means, but there's that one's definitely still circulating around.
Right.
The other one, which is the very controversial, is basically local restrictions on firearms. So
that allowing counties to dictate?
Counties, office buildings, universities. It's vague in what and who can implement. We know it, it can happen at the county level. We know it can happen at the city municipality level. It could happen at certain institutions. So like state colleges, anything like that, they could pass regulations to say, you're not allowed to bring firearms into the premises. So basically in Colorado, it stands today, the state sets the requirement for firearms.
Right.
So Boulder had passed an assault style weapon ban, it was, I think in the tail end of 2019, 2020, somewhere around that thing. It basically was struck down by Colorado Supreme Court because the law states you either have to meet the state you can't set differential firearm restrictions at the local level,
right?
Which they did. So this bill would overwrite the state statute to say, if you're municipality of Boulder, if you're Littleton, you could provide restrictions on firearms, any type of equipment, ammunition, anything around the whole enchilada associated with firearms. So it's a very restrictive bill. In addition to that, the other concern with it is, it goes after concealed carry. So the concealed carry portion of the registration is today it's handled at the county level.
Yeah.
In this new bill, it would be handled at the state level, and then counties, institutions would have the option to prohibit folks from taking concealed carry on. So if a state college says you're not allowed to, you're not allowed to.
Yeah.
The big problem, as I understand it, is it impacts multiple other states as well. Mm-hmm. So if today you have a concealed carry permit, you have reciprocity. If you go over to Nebraska,
sure,
you can go it. But if you start having individual local firearm restrictions, that reciprocity is going to get pulled. So you're going to see something similar to like when you pull up the map of like Illinois.
Right.
Illinois has a very distinct firearms kind of regulation.
Sure.
That is not, we don't accept that in Colorado. They don't accept ours.
Mm-hmm.
So you get into a really complex issue of going from point A to B in the state. You could drive through a municipality, a district that could have different requirements for firearms,
yeah,
which could trigger you to commit essentially a felony.
It's so interesting. I mean, to relate a little bit, New York City's five boroughs have their own gun laws compared to the rest of New York State, yeah, and it makes even flying into JFK like a difficult thing to do. You got to be very mind your P's and Q's. You could just fly in and be committing a felony just because you're going to go hunt upstate or New York's where you're heading out of.
Exactly.
And I'm curious if there's anything that people should be paying attention to or looking at or following, or certain senators or congresspeople, any way to just kind of make sure people who are listening may have a chance to monitor.
Yeah, one, go to Colorado General Assembly. Colorado Politics as well is another web source of information. And I would say for people listening, stay very connected to your local representation as to where they're standing on the issue. And if they're not in alignment with your beliefs, I would aggressively contact them.
Yeah.
And call, email, just to say, hey, I don't agree with this, or here's my stance on it. It's concerning because it flew through the Senate very,
yeah,
quickly with very minimal amendments. It is at the House.
Yeah.
If it passes the House with no amendments, it could go to the governor's desk for signature. Now, the Supreme Court of the United States has indicated that they are going to hear, I think, the next court session, mm-hmm, which would be next year, the New York restriction on firearms.
Yeah.
So the belief is there is now enough votes on the Supreme Court to kind of overturn those type of firearm bans.
Mm-hmm.
So that could open the door. I think that if this were to pass, you know, immediately it's going to be a lawsuit, and
know,
the
it's
NRA is going
to
be involved,
not.
Rocky Mountain Gun Owners, like all these organizations. But the concerning piece when you hear the debate, at least when I heard the debate for the Office of Gun Violence,
yeah,
there was 50 some people who showed up to testify in person as well as on. There was maybe four folks that were representing kind of the firearms side.
Oh, geez. Yeah,
so
we're gonna get a rep.
It was a little bit more
in there.
Especially with this one. So the NRA was there, and this one being the local restriction on firearms. So you had more of the lobbying groups associated with the firearm industry. So
yeah,
it was good, but it is concerning. So,
and just for people listening, whatever your opinions are on this, being that the NRA is going through the issues it's going through, and I think some of that is rightfully so. Don't take people's money when it should be going to shooting ranges and stuff like that. But we'll save that for another time. Just the idea is like they don't have the strength they used to. So you need to get involved and be,
yes,
on a personal level, not just expecting somebody else to do your bidding for you.
Exactly.
Keep your ear to the pulse. And like, I have a concealed carry permit just because if I'm out hunting and I put a jacket on, it's concealed. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to run into any issues. You know, I don't necessarily feel the need to have a gun in a 7-Eleven or whatever, but do what you want to do. It's just interesting that that is potentially coming to the county level, or rather the state level, for counties to then manipulate. So
yeah,
appreciate you paying attention to all this stuff. It seems like it's can fly under the radar, especially when it gets momentum. And
it does. And there's been a lot of aggressive policies pushed,
yeah,
this year, and all of them passed.
Yeah.
So it kind of sets the stage for 2022 is an election year. The governor's up for re-election. It's going to be a lot of media attention.
Yeah.
The Colorado District 3, Lauren Boebert's up for re-election again. Carrie Donovan, who's, mm-hmm, terming out on the Senate, she's already not, you know, voiced her intent to run against her. So there's going to be a lot of, I think there's going to be a lot of stuff that's going to come out of the woodworks.
Yeah.
Way more than what we saw in 2021. Which was already pretty aggressive.
Yeah.
So it's you know, will we get the reprieve during the summer? I mean, I think we're working aggressively on talking with different sportsmen's groups, strategizing so that when the fall session comes into fold, we are ready to execute. And
yeah,
we've built up, you know, the podcast, the magazine, the different outlets to communicate on. And now it's just getting out into shops and talking with folks, because it's going to be aggressive.
Yeah, 100%. Well, I really appreciate it, man. Yeah. You are thorough as all hell. Is there anything I'm missing or we're missing on this?
No, I think that's it. I mean, just stay tuned. We'll talk next one on different tactics we're going to start to roll out, and we're having a strategy session, I think, this Friday or Saturday, kind of putting some more thought into what we should be doing, and kind of laying out the plan for the next couple of years. So it should be good.
Great.
So looking forward to that.
Well, I appreciate that, man. It's always great catching up with you on these things. To pivot a little bit over to Quick Draw and to kind of try to relate, let me see if I can do a segue here, is things that need action. If you need a new top-of-the-line bow, you better order it soon, because you're not going to get it before hunting season, according to Kevin over here. So, Kevin, I'm curious as to how you're feeling about this upcoming season, the upcoming archery season, if you have any events going on, things you want to promote.
We're really looking forward to the upcoming season, actually. It's always exciting. May is kind of the calm before the storm for us as shop owners. It's going to be a good season. I'm already hearing the draw just happened, so I'm already hearing from all my buddies what tags they got. And looking forward to it. Again, from a bow standpoint, you know, it's a rough year, rough time to get a bow. You know, I know everyone's got some in stock. But they go quick. Everything else is actually looking okay. You know, for me personally, arrows are a little slow coming in, but they're all going to be here in the next few weeks.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, we're looking forward to getting out there. And, you know, we always do, you know, leading up to hunting season, here in partnership with Backcountry, Wilderness Area right up the street, we do a 3D league,
Nice.
We started this month, this year we started here in May, and we run it all the way basically up to opening weekend. So,
oh, great. Is it weekly or?
It's weekly, every week, tonight, actually Wednesday nights. And yeah, it's weekly. We got a good group, usually 20 or 30 people, and, we go a couple hours on the 3D course, and almost all of them, just basically using it as their excuse to, you know, get ready for the hunting season, and, you know, share stories and tips and tricks and stuff like that. So it's a lot of fun. We'll be heading there soon. And, that's pretty much what we do, to get ready for hunting seasons, particularly.
That's great. All right. I got just a random question. If there's one thing you could tell every bow hunter, about getting like their equipment dialed in for the year, like as a shop owner, what's your biggest pet peeve? You know, someone showing up August 14th being like, I got an antelope hunt tomorrow. Can you retune everything? My arrow's not flying straight. Like shoot broadheads early. Is there some sort of couple of things that you want people to do to,
you know, from a pet peeve standpoint, you know, people coming in August needing strings, you know, in a week. We do a pretty good job of maintaining like a 10-day turnaround or less on strings, but man, strings are tough.
Yeah.
You know, the string makers get bogged down. So that's my biggest pet peeve is last minute, I need a string. You know, other than that, advice wise, yeah, start shooting your broadheads, you know, in a month,
mm-hmm.
and make sure that they're flying, you know, like your field points. And if they're not, you know, get your bow tuned.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of people, we get a lot of people come in here and their whole lives, they just recite in their broadheads. And I'm like, why are you doing that? And they're like, well, because they don't fly the same. I'm like, well, they're supposed to.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, I never knew that. So, it's amazing. You know, just, you know, just a little tuning can get everything straightened out pretty easily.
Yeah. I kind of noticed that my broadheads generally fly true. I stick with the fixed blade for the most part, but generally fly true to about 60. And I'm shooting a lot outside. I also might suck at archery, so who knows? That's always the question. I mean, I don't know how you feel as a shop owner, but I'm always like, am I good enough to make an adjustment right now? Like, should I turn the Allen key or not?
Well, I mean, if you're flying 2 to 60, you're in pretty good shape.
Yeah. You know?
In most scenarios, hopefully you're not taking a whole lot of shots over that. And, you know, a lot happens in 60 yards, especially when you got, you know, you basically got veins in the front of your arrow as well as the back of your arrow.
Right, right.
So what I'm more concerned with the guys that, you know, their 30 yard pin changes.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, from a broadhead to a field point. So, yeah, I say, you know, get all that stuff done now.
Nice.
You know, if you think you need strings, get them looked at. If your bow hasn't been tuned in a while, just get it tuned. Knock that stuff out. Definitely don't, you know, don't wait till 2 weeks before your hunt to
blow the arrows. Dust off the old compound bow there. Yeah.
No, I mean, it's serious. And, you know, some people literally pull their bows out for 2 weeks a year.
Yeah.
And that's great. You know, people have other interests, but,
it's not a rifle.
Expect to get your problems solved in those 2 weeks. You know, better hope you have no problems.
Have you seen that in like recent years, at least for me, like thinking about like when I first started doing archery, like it was, you pulled the bow out, you shot a little bit during the year, you shot a little bit around, you hunted with it. But now, like, you know, since I've known you at least, with indoor league, target league in the winter, and then that transitions to spring league, and then you got 3D league in the summer. Like, are you seeing more of those kind of typical, like, hey, bow hunters who just used to kind of operate like I did now engage year round, as well as, you know, kind of for social reasons, as well as just competitive?
Well, I mean, well, we push that here, and that's kind of that's kind of our theme at Quick Draw specifically, is kind of engaging the archers in the sport, as well as, you know, the hunting aspect is great. You know, September is a great month, and it's awesome. But at the end of the day, it's like, what do you do the other 11 months?
Right.
So we do year round leagues basically, and it's very rare for you to come in here and say, hey, do you have leagues? And for us to say, oh, you got to wait a couple weeks. It's like, hey, come Friday.
Nice.
And we got a great community of people, and you know, it's pretty welcoming. All our stuff is, you know, either not competitive at all, or a very good handicap system. So it's like anyone can win. And so I would say, Wes, I think I'm seeing that, where a lot of people, you know, used to be a 1 month a year bow shooter, and now they're like year round. But I don't know if that's a trend, you know, nationally, or if that's just because we're essentially begging them to do that. Like, hey, come shoot with us indoor, come, you know, come do this, come do that. You know, so like, as you know, we got our 3D league. It'll end up September. September is the month where we do no leagues. We do take a little break, obviously. And then we'll jump right into indoor leagues.
That leads me, I have two questions. One, for any of these leagues or in your shop, do you ever rent out bows, or like people could try stuff out?
We do obviously have bow rentals. All our rentals are recurves here at our shop. So we don't have compounds for rent. We do have people that don't own equipment that actually come to our league, and they're literally looking for something to do, and meet new people. And of course they always end up buying a bow at some point.
My leading question is, what do you think the biggest barrier to entry is in getting people into, and it doesn't have to be a bow, but I just thought entry level bow is like $300-$400, and someone's like, I don't know if I want to do that. $300-$400, ton of money.
Yeah, no, I mean, they need to know that they're going to be able to do it, right? And in this day and age, you know, people are hesitant, not only because of the cost, but then, you know, it's like, well, do I really have the time for another hobby? And, you know, some people don't, or some people, you know, don't love it enough to make time. And that's fine. It's a preference, right? But,
sure.
But I mean, you can get into bows pretty easy. I know we take bows in on consignment, and, you know, some people come in here on a tight budget, and we find a bow that fits them that, you know, usually one of Wes's old bows or something.
Yeah.
But, you know, we try and make it work. We do what we can. And, you know, worst case, we send them to a box store and let them get a, you know, really inexpensive bow. And it would just, you know, our theme here again is getting people engaged in shooting bows. So, you know, we obviously are a retail operation, but 80% of our business is really getting new people in the door, instructions. We do a lot of family lessons, a lot of, you know, corporate, like team building events, a lot of, you know, parties, private lessons, small group lessons, our youth programs. We got those running like 5 days a week. So we're just trying to make the world have more archers, essentially, is what we're doing.
And us too at the CBA.
Yeah. And you do a lot, like, with Joe at Youth Archery. You're heavily involved in USA Archery. What are the trends that you're seeing, just with, at least from, you know, since I've been involved, my two kids have been involved in Joad, and I'm learning it. It just seems like it's exploding. A lot more kids are getting involved. A lot more parents are engaged as well with it, and kind of shooting with them a little bit. What are you seeing on the Joad circuit or just general youth archery?
On the youth side, we're seeing growth. I'd say we kind of went through a little bit of a slump. 2020, obviously, we'll just kind of forget that year happened. but 2019 was kind of a stagnant year for youth archery. And then, you know, the couple of years before that was right after Hunger Games and Brave and, you know, like Hollywood helped archery a lot.
Sure.
From a kid standpoint. So USA Archery saw explosive growth, almost more than they can handle, to be quite honest, but it was explosive growth. And, and then it was Olympic year as well. It was crazy. And then, like I said, 2019 was a little bit stagnant. But now, I think I looked at the numbers, a week or two ago, and I think we're up like 120% membership in Colorado in USA Archery. And I think that, you know, pandemic based a little bit. But people are loving it. And at the same time, you know, well, in Wes, you know how it is. It's you're watching your kid, you're taking your kid to archery practice, and you just have to sit there and watch them shoot for an hour and mm-hmm. kind of get jealous, right? So we do. I see a trend. We deal with a lot of kids, a quick draw. But if a kid is in our classes for 5 months, it's almost guaranteed that one of the parents is going to end up with a bow.
Oh, I believe
it,
man.
For the first time in their life. You know, these aren't. Obviously, we do have people who have, you know, hunting backgrounds, and they're just trying to get their kid in archery so they can hunt with them. But, you know, these people are like, well, I want to shoot a bow. Is there a bow that fits me? And then all of a sudden, it's a family affair.
Yeah.
I mean, we've got two girls that joined our classes. First time archers, and they shot for a few, a few months. And then of course dad wanted to get into it, and he bought a bow, and now, you know, the whole family will be at 3D tonight, and it's kind of cool.
That's great. To relate a little bit. So when I was 9 years old, my pops got me a pitching coach for baseball. My father played D1 baseball at the University of Vermont and got my older brother into it. And I was got into it. So 9 years old, I'm with a pitching coach. My dad's sitting upstairs in the like parents observation section. And within like 8 or 9 lessons, he's in the cage with me, and he's, you know, asking the guy a few questions. For the next 10 years or 8 years, I went to those lessons every week, and my dad had a lesson right after me, and he started doing it. And now we're talking 20 years later. My pops is in his 70s, still playing hardball baseball, still pitching. It stuck with him. He was a shortstop before that, never pitched the ball, but he loved the idea of the mechanics of it. And I think it's something I really love about archery is like there's some technical precision to it, where if you're in a bad mental place, or if you're not in that flow state, or if you're not getting to that place, the arrow's not going to fly true, or at least not where you want it to be. It always flies true, it just doesn't fly where you thought it would. So I do think that's like a total inroad for people, is like, hey, an activity for your kids. Cause like not every parent that takes their kid to karate is going to pick up a karate. Right.
Right. Yeah.
But it's pretty easy with a bow. And I find like I'm a single guy, first dates, it's pretty easy to be like, hey, let's go to the archery range. We'll get the recurve. It's like a ton of fun. There's a primal feeling to like hit the target with my baseball, with my arrow, with whatever it is. So I think that's awesome. And it's kind of a gentle way to be like, hey, parents, come in. You can also shoot. Here's a bow. You see your kid doing it. If he can do it, I can do it, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. And a lot of times the kids actually do it better. It's kind of crazy.
A little more teachable.
They can see it better.
Yeah, better eyesight. But no, I tell everyone, I'm like, it's a forever sport. You know, you mm-hmm. can shoot archery. We got like 95-year-old people coming in here, and it's a good family sport. Within reason, the kids can go and do exactly what dad's doing. We can go to, and obviously, a small child may not be able to take the 50-yard shots or whatever, but within reason, it's something you can really do together. So. That's what we reinforce in all our programs and just try and get more people involved.
Yeah, man, I think that's great.
It's awesome. I mean, it makes the sport so, you know, it just continues to revive it to the new generation, and you get more kids in here and people more willing to just kind of understand and look at kind of life a little bit differently through a different filter, especially I think at least once they get into the archery side of things. It's kind of hit or miss. Like you see some involved in hunting, others are just super into the target piece. Either way, it's to me, it feels like 3D really opens up the hunting avenue. Like people who are interested, not sure they want to do it, but curious about trying to run 3D and experience it and see, wow, it's a lot harder shooting at angles than it is on a flat surface.
Yeah,
absolutely.
And the yardage and the wind, it's like, whoa.
100%. And something intriguing about looking at an animal shape versus a bullseye, because the bullseye can get a little repetitive. And I just find, like, you take a 30-yard bullseye and a 30-yard mule deer, like, for some reason, I'm just a little more honed on that rubber Reinhardt than I am on the bullseye, because 30 shots, 40 shots, you get a little mental fatigue.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. And I think 3D is, you know, an incredible opportunity for people, really, even if, you know, like you said, it's just more fun or interesting. And even if you have no desire to ever, you know, harvest an animal, you know, when we have plenty of those people, they're almost like, it's kind of weird. They're in an archery shop and they're almost anti-hunting, but you know, they have a blast in the 3D course. And mm-hmm. so you got that aspect of it. And then you got the flip side that's like, hey, you know, I want to go hunting with my kids someday, and I'm going to spend 3 years in the 3D course waiting for their, you know, 12th birthday. And all of a sudden, you know, their kids understand up and down shots and wind
yeah.
And the trees and where the branches are and all that good stuff. So it's tons of fun. You know, we're fortunate. I don't own a 3D range or anything, but we're fortunate to have a great relationship with the backcountry and get used to that. And the stuff we do with them. So I think everyone should do 3D if you don't already.
That's sure. nice. And something I believe the CBA is working on is a map of archery ranges across the state, and specifically like the Front Range as well. And I was surprised to find out how many opportunities there were. Like, my parents were freaking out about me shooting in my backyard, because like, oh, there's the neighbors, there's a tennis court, there's whatever. Don't go down to the local school, or you're going to get arrested, even though, you know, no one's there. It's the middle of the summer. But out here in Colorado, almost many state parks, many private places, there's 3D ranges, Cheyenne Mountains got, Bar Lake's got, I think there's something over Cherry Creek. Like, it's really accessible if you just kind of look for it a little bit.
Yeah, there's no shortage of ranges. You know, I always think there could be more 3D ranges, obviously, but yeah. they're the most expensive to maintain.
Yeah. Well, don't be a jerk and use your broadhead on the elk at the 3D range, because then my arrow goes right through it and you cost me $20.
Yeah,
so.
if we could stop that, that would help a lot. But we're fortunate in Colorado. There's lots of opportunity to shoot. There's lots of opportunity to shoot with other people.
Yeah.
And so we're always trying to, again, you know, just trying to build the community. So everyone just kind of feels welcome, and just feels like they got kind of friends in archery, if you will.
Yeah, and I'd assume a lot of people listening to this are into archery or into the CBA, but at the same time, it's an invitation for you to bring your girlfriend, your husband, your wife, your kid, whomever, you just like always kind of, I get it if archery is like your thing, your alone time thing, but man, I've noticed about anything I do in life, surfing, snowboarding, archery, when someone's there to like witness your stoke, to witness like your excitement about something, it just lights a little fire inside of you. Like, you saw me, or I saw you do good, or I'm watching you improve. Like, I think it's amazing. You said it, archery is like a lifelong sport. And the reason it's a lifelong sport is like, there's always something to refine. There's always something to tweak or try new. Or you see a lot of guys eventually go to a recurve or some sort of traditional equipment. And I'm personally very drawn to the things that I will never stop learning in. And so if you're looking for something where it keeps you focused, keeps you healthy, there's community to it. I mean, archery is a pretty easy one that hits all those buttons.
Yeah, for sure.
And you're working on, you want to talk a little bit about kind of the tournament you're working and kind of your gestation and idea around that?
Yeah. So, again, we're always just trying to find things, keep people engaged, keep people motivated. And one thing Colorado, really one of the only things in the archery world that Colorado has been missing, is kind of a national level event. So, we've got, you know, tons of, highly competitive, professional archers that call Colorado home. You know, real big name people, but and they travel all over the country going to these shoots, and we didn't have one. And so me and a group of people kind of decided it's time to bring one back to Colorado. So we've got the Mile High Triple Threat. It's scheduled for it's opening Antelope weekend, I know, but it's August 13th through 15th. It's gonna be right out here in the Littleton at the backcountry. And it's a big 3-day event. It'll be a field tournament, combined with a 3D tournament combined with a outdoor target tournament. So, 3 days, three different events. We got $27,000 purse so far, depending on how sponsors continue to come in, that may grow even. You know, we've been socializing it pretty nationally. We got some good national archers coming in as well. Like I said, we already have a bunch that just live here already. But we're expecting, a real good turnout, hundreds of people, all our favorite pros and some great sponsors and just a good time.
That sounds awesome. How does someone apply or get involved or sign up to shoot?
The easiest way is milehightriple.com is the website. You jump there. It's got all the information. If you're interested in being a sponsor, there's a place to reach out to us there. My information's on there as well. If you're just looking to get tickets for it, you get tickets. Again, we're all about being inclusive. So of course, if you want to take on the pros and, you know, win a big money prize, you can register in the championship division. But we also got an amateur division, which actually still has money on the line, cash prizes. And then we also got a trophy division. So if you just want to come out with your family and shoot your first tournament, and maybe get some autographs from people that you find on YouTube.
Yeah.
You can do that. And, it's fairly affordable and, you might win a trophy.
That sounds great, man.
You know, we got youth divisions, adult divisions. It should be a lot of fun. Our vision is that it's, you know, the shoot that everyone talks about, every year. We'd like to make an annual thing, hopefully in July in future years, but, we're looking forward to it.
That's going to be so cool. That's awesome, man.
Yeah.
I think that's going to take right off, especially because that's going to be right around when all things are fully open and people want to go out and be in the world. And there's something I find to being in the same room as professionals, as people who are that high level. Like if you ever go see a golf tournament, it's different. It's different than your friend who's a scratch golfer. This guy's been a scratch golfer, a plus five for 20 years. Like it's the level of focus, the level of routine, level of commitment. And sometimes you even see the level of like nonchalance. Like, dude, you're about to go do this thing. The guy's like shooting the shit, listening to his radio, whatever it is. So I always find that it's fascinating to see those worlds because we have these expectations in our head of what a pro looks like or how somebody acts. But then when you see someone do it, it kind of relinquishes those preconceived notions. So that's great, man. If you're going to shoot or not shoot, definitely go check that out.
There's a couple here that shoot out of the shop and it's interesting. I shot with them in a couple tournaments, like in the league tournaments you had. And it's like, it's impressive. You think like, wow, I think I'm finally getting better. And then you shoot next to him and it's like, no, I'm not. Yeah. I look horrid.
It's motivating though. You know?
Yeah, it
you
is.
Know?
'Cause,
I mean, we've all hit the dead center, right? I mean, yeah. We feel good, but you know, when you watch someone just put an arrow in the same hole over and over again, you're just like, whoa, you know? And then you're like, okay, well, what can I do to change? Maybe, you know,
you learn
get
a
little closer to that. You learn a lot, right? Yeah,
like, extension of self.
Like Jake Pettit. His draw is the smoothest draw I've ever seen.
Yeah, he's like crazy.
Well, that's the thing I'm starting to learn, and I probably should take some lessons as opposed to just develop bad habits. But how much, like a golf shot, how much of this can you make exactly the same? How you draw it back, the pace at which you draw it back, how you breathe, when your shot routine, I guess is what they call it. But there's... You know, the moment you release the arrow is relatively similar across the board, but how you get to that moment, both mentally and physically, is there's a lot to be learned in that space.
Yeah, and it's really just being aware of what your shot process is. Archery, especially compound archery, is unique in that, you know, there's not a perfect, proper way to shoot.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just like golf swing, right? You got some guys that have an aggressive swing, and that's the one thing. You know, where the community comes in, it's like, okay, you can't just read a book and say, I'm gonna do everything perfect. It's like, okay, I need to learn. I need to try this. And then if that's not working for me, for my body makeup, then you need someone to kind of say, hey, you know, I tried this once and it worked really well. And then, you can kind of take all the information and that's how you improve. You just all of a sudden, you're like, oh, I never thought about trying that. I mean, just, you know, looking at Jake Pettit, he is not a textbook shooter by any means.
Mm-hmm.
You look at him, I'm a coach, and I look at him like, I don't understand how he hits the center so every time, but he does.
Yeah.
And but it works for him, and that's he'll tell you the same thing. He's like, there's no right way to shoot. There's some recommendations, there's some fundamentals definitely, but aside from that, just you just gotta try some things and put the time in.
That's awesome, man. Well, I just, as an archer, even though we just met an hour ago, appreciate somebody who's out there wanting to facilitate these things. It's very easy to be selfish and be like, I hunt when I hunt, I shoot when I shoot, I sell bows, but that's what I do, versus someone who's like outwardly pushing involvement, youth involvement, adult involvement, national level tournaments. Like, from you're hitting it from every angle, man. And it's just, I appreciate it. I know other members of CBA and future members of the CBA also appreciate it. Go join now, coloradobowhunting.org. $30 for a year. You get a sick magazine, 6 issues. Trev and Matt are killing that. Just a little selfish self-promotion in there. We also just recently got a new guest, great archer, Joey Brown, just walked up to the table. And Joey, we're happy to have you here. Sorry for a little bit of directional confusion this morning, but we got it. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I like bows. I like the big poster for CBA up on the wall up there.
Yeah, prominently displayed.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably need a new one, actually.
If you got to run at some point, Kevin, feel free to just go. But before you run, I want you to plug everything you want to plug. We're at Quick Draw Archery. Do you guys have a website, social media, phone number? What do you want to?
Yeah, there's quickdrawarchery.net. We're, like I said, we're in Littleton, Colorado, or the west side of Highlands Ranch, right there off 85. And yeah, if you're in the area, we'd love you to stop by, see if we can take care of you.
Awesome, man. Well, I appreciate you having us in your shop and coming on the podcast, supporting the CBA, and we'll support you and your tournaments as much as possible, man. This was great.
All right. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, brother. All right. Sweet. We are back. Still at Quick Draw Archery, but we're getting ready for 3D League. Before we do that, I want to get a quick update with what's going on at the CPW. Joey, what do you got for us?
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me. Pretty slow meeting. For what month are we in? For the May meeting, mm-hmm. May 5 and 6, I believe it was.
Yeah.
But I did want to let everybody know they added an additional like 197,000 acres.
I saw something about that.
Yeah.
What is that about? Is that National Refuge or?
No. So there is National Wildlife Refuge that they're doing on the federal side.
Uh-huh.
None of those are in Colorado, though. Most of those are Montana.
Trying to hunt Rocky Mountain National Arsenal.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, they
some nice muleys in there.
Yeah. I don't know. But I think there's a bunker under there. That's
yeah. Let's avoid it.
No. So this is state trust land. That, you know, sometimes the state will lease to make money. They basically have to make money with it.
Right.
But they will lease it to outfitters sometimes, or to the ranch owners if it like joins their property, where they can kind of use it and pay for the lease. Sometimes they lease it for energy, oil and gas, whatever it is. But now the CPW is leasing some of them to add to for big game hunting. So 58 more properties this
wow.
year. I think they added 70 some last year, and then like 10 or 15 the year before.
That's awesome.
So they're in like a 3 or 4 year plan of adding state trust lands to be accessible for big game seasons. So 58 properties that'll open up September 1st.
Really?
It's like another 200,000 acres.
Selfishly, I want to ask you this off mic, but this is the CBA. How do people find out what's open up, what the maps
know,
are?
I
know Onyx has their work cut out for them.
Yep. If you Google Colorado Hunting Atlas,
uh-huh.
there's a really cool tool that you can look at. I don't know if you've seen it.
Yeah, I've used it for like species migrations, but I didn't know you could see what's public, what's not public, or open to the public.
Yeah. I think it's the hunter reference little filter on the left, but you can filter like offices and state properties.
Cool.
When I checked a few days ago, it still wasn't updated yet.
Okay.
I would assume they're not going to update it until September 1st when the properties are added to it.
There's a few people out there with some inside knowledge I'm very jealous of.
Yeah. Well, you can, if you go to the Parks and Wildlife website, you go to About Us, you go to Commission, mm-hmm. and then Meetings.
Okay.
If you hit the May 5th and 6th meeting, it's in the revised agenda
about,
you know, all the numbers and letters for...
you guys, that's worth the price of admission. ColoradoBowhunters.org, $30 a year.
Yep. We just gave you all the value. You should buy 2 memberships.
Yeah.
But yeah, you can go there and it lists out all the properties. And I've spent probably too many hours trying to grab those properties and find out where they are. Because right now, if you look at any map, it just says state trust land, no hunting access, or no public access.
Right.
Now, they're giving these, all the new properties, they're giving them names. Some of them are sort of correlated with other features on the geography or in the area. So yeah, there's like Antelope Flats is one of them.
Interesting.
Which is a place, but there's a few state trust lands around that area. I don't know which one they're going to open up yet. I would assume they're going to keep that a little bit tight so they don't have
sure
people getting
flash
antsy
mob.
And, yeah, you know.
But yeah, that's a pretty exciting thing that came out of the meeting.
How many acres?
197,000 and change.
Considering I hunt a 5,000 acre parcel, that's insane. That's so much land.
Yeah.
That's so much land. That's great.
It's I'm going to be waiting with bated breath for them to actually tell me which parcels I can go.
Yeah. It's like, oh, by the way, they're all landlocked. It's like, ah,
yeah.
Damn it.
Yeah. Turn into Montana real quick. Other than that, just making some progress on trying to put in a citizen's petition on behalf of the CBA for, you know, some different archery equipment regulations. Shout out to the guys at Quick Draw, Bear Creek, a couple other big shops that I've been talking to get some numbers and better perspectives from like the small business owner side of things.
Mm-hmm. Is this specifically having to do with let off 80%, 85%?
Jake, it is.
Gotcha. I read that regulation. So weird. And like, it seems like a moot point at this. Like, how could someone enforce that without a scale in their hand? Like, we've talked about this a little bit on the last episode, but it just seems so silly to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and in doing a little bit more research from the last time we talked, like, most states have some sort of regulation tied to archery equipment.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's let off percentage maximums, broadhead size restrictions,
right,
or like minimum draw weights.
Yep.
So there's only four states that have any sort of let off percentage, which would be Colorado, Montana, Idaho, and Nevada.
That's very interesting because those are huge archery states, like the premier archery states.
Yep. I think a lot of it has to do with back in the day when crossbows were trying to break into the scene.
Uh-huh.
The percentage let off, setting a max there, it was a very clear
throws a crossbow out of restrict. I gotcha.
Yep,
that makes sense.
Yep. Well, I mean, crossbows, like, they can outlaw those because there's zero let off, but it's trying to strike a balance between, you know, if you had a 99% let off, which isn't really, you know, possible.
Yeah,
but if you had a 99%, then what's the limit on, do we allow that, but we don't allow 100%,
right,
a crossbow, right? But
for some interesting nuance there, because you do want it to exist, but you don't want a law to prevent bow manufacturers, bow shops from selling the best product out there.
Right. And like going, like the industry standard when Colorado implemented the 80%, the industry standard was 80%.
It's easy, like, to do at the time. No arguments there.
Right. That's, you know, it'd be like setting a speed limit at 10 miles an hour when the Model T's out. Right?
Yeah.
You give it several years, cars can now go faster, we should probably look at raising the speed limit.
Right.
There is a point, like, you know, it's a muddy line of what turns into efficiency gains,
mm-hmm,
with let off,
mm-hmm,
and, you know, what gets too close to being fair chase violation.
Yeah.
Being unfair advantage to the hunter.
Sure.
I think we're very far away from that, especially going from 80 to 85%.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's an interesting conversation.
What people are considering, yeah.
Right.
That is fascinating. And so is this, I'm sorry if you already even mentioned it, this is something that the CPW is considering a rule change on, or how did this even like come to be
it's
talked, you know, about again?
Yeah. In working like the CBA and working with some of our partners and bow shops and, you know, some of the prominent hunters in the state, or even just archers in the state, kind of came to us and said, hey, you know, when's the last time we looked at this? Would the CBA be willing to, you know, use our expertise and go put in a petition?
Mm-hmm.
So the CPW is not really looking at it. What we're going to do is submit a citizen's petition,
uh-huh,
with our requested rule change.
That goes to the commissioner or?
Yeah, it'll go to the commission. First, the CPW staff will take a look at it,
uh-huh,
see if there's any weight to our, you know, to the argument, or, you know, if there's any questions they have before it goes to the commission. But then it would go to the commission to be presented as you know, an issue that could be addressed. They'll give like the CBA, which will be myself, maybe a couple others, 15 minutes to present why we think the rules should be changed.
Gotcha.
Then they'll schedule it at the next commission meeting for a vote and any final comments.
So I'm assuming the more signatures, the more powerful this, the more weight this holds with the CPW, or how does the petition work?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like they'll look at anything. It's a cool sort of democratic process that we have in Colorado to be able to submit citizen petitions to the commission for review. You know, number of signatures is certainly one thing that helps, but if it's a really clear and compelling argument that we present, you know, we may not need any signature.
Is there a place that people can go to show their support for this initiative?
Yes. I need to talk to Matt to make sure the email is set up.
Yep.
But we'll have an email set up on the CBA website, ColoradoBowhunting.org, where people can submit public comment.
Great. I'll also link to it in the show notes of this episode. Yep,
that would be perfect. But yeah, you know, any and all comments are great. If you want to see a change, if you don't want to see a change, I'd love any input I can.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I'd love any input you can send me.
That's awesome. Well, I really appreciate it, man. Is there anything else going on before we go shoot some rubber deers?
Come to the Jamboree.
Oh, that's right. That's a good thing to promote. And we've locked down a date for that. Do you know it?
July 13th through that's 17th.
Sounds right.
July
Jamboree.
14th. The second, I think it's the second weekend.
Okay. Weekend in, after tack. Again in the show notes. But it's a lot of fun. It's a couple of days of archery events, right?
Yeah, yeah. Friday, Saturday. Yep.
That's so sweet. All
Sunday
right.
Well, too, maybe. Yep.
That's back after a year hiatus. It didn't happen last summer, right?
That's correct.
Sweet. Well, we're coming back full steam ahead. I really appreciate you spending some time with me today and keeping your thumb to the pulse with these things.
Yeah.
I think on behalf of everybody, we all appreciate it, man.
Thanks for having me.
Awesome. Well, let's go shoot.
Cheers.